This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good afternoon, this is Joy 94.9 and you are listening to the amazing, the fabulous Escape Hour. Welcome to our show. My name's Russ Masterton and today we have on the panel the amazing Tad Lombardo. How are you, Tad?
I'm well, how are you?
I couldn't be better. Had a great week. I've been to the gym a couple of times.
Good.
I've been to the movies, I've chilled out, had a nice week.
Good.
What about yourself?
Same. Gym, running, you know, all that kind of stuff.
You're into a bit of CrossFit at the moment.
I am doing CrossFit. Yeah.
Tell us all about CrossFit.
CrossFit, oh, it's killer.
Yeah, it's
it is.
Scary.
It's tough, yeah. And you have to kind of be in the right mindset for it. And I've only just started it, and it's pretty full on. Yeah. Like, it's just, you're just constantly being hit with these physical challenges and things that you've never done before, but it's really good because it challenges you to do different things. Like, the other day I was on the rings, and
wow,
like, I've not done gymnastics in my entire life, but you know, you kind of realize how unfit you are when you're doing
that. No, you're not Ted. No. You're looking like a muscle Mary, I have to say. I'm going to start calling you Mary Lombardo.
No, but it's just you have to be conditioned to do certain things, and it just takes a little while to do that. So,
good job, though. It's great. Especially winter is a great time of the year to be indoors and doing your CrossFit. So, well done.
And I'm doing my week 7 of my transformation. So,
week 7. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. We'll have to. We really do need a Facebook page so we can, you know, put the befores and afters up, don't we?
We are working on that. Yeah. Okay. We've got that happening. Yeah.
All right. For sure. We also have the amazing, the talented Fiona Brooke sitting opposite.
Hello.
Hey, Fiona. How are you?
Yep. I'm pretty super.
Now, what are you wearing this week? I love to ask every week because you're so glamorous.
Fiona
just can't stand it.
Well, I do have one of my favorite jackets, which I do wear a lot. It is really, really, really stunning. It is a European designer label. I did not pay full price for it. Yeah. That's not my philosophy of life, which is on sale, wholesale, or no sale.
Yeah, that's right. Your philosophy on life is if it's got gin and it looks good on you, you'll buy it, right?
That's right.
There you go.
That's exactly right. So, yes, I do have a lovely velvet jacket.
Now, Ted, we have just had some good news, which is coming,
exciting.
Which is absolutely awesome.
We've got a new membership from Jerry in Melbourne.
Yay,
thank you
Jerry.
So much.
Yay, Jerry. Welcome to the
amazing
club. We always love having new members.
Welcome to the Flight Club.
Got a new member of our community. Now, there are some official things that we've got to do at the start of our show, so I'll let you take them away, Ted.
We want to thank everybody who helps us put this show to air. I want to start by thanking Alex and Neil on the front desk who look after the admin side of things for us.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank also, well, I was going to thank Adam Samuels, but he didn't do the news today. He went to the football instead, but anyway.
Oh.
All right.
Well, he was here,
I'll thank
though.
Thank him too, though. I know. And he's doing the news on Saturday.
Well, this time of the year,
good.
If you're into men, you've got to go to the footy.
You
those
do.
Boys in shorts.
And then also want to thank Peter Tocknell, our podcaster. He creates all of our shows and converts them into podcast format so that they can go out to the world, which is pretty amazing. And you can download them via iTunes or through the website on joy.org.au. Obviously, I want to thank our incredible audience for listening in and putting up with us for an hour each week. And if you want to contact us during the show at any time, you can SMS us on 0427-JOY-949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au.
Thank you very much. We would love to hear from you today. Our special topic today is going to be Morocco. So if you'd like to know anything about Morocco, please send us in a message, 0427-JOY-949. We have our producer, Fiona Brooke, is going to do a drum roll introduction to our special guest today. May you introduce Fiona?
I will indeed. Karen Hadfield, thank you for coming along. Karen is an artist who has done the most incredible life change. She is owns a beautiful, beautiful artist retreat in the deserts of Morocco, Café Tizamin, and it's an artist retreat, and it's your home, Karen. How did this happen?
It is indeed my home. It was sheer fluke. I went on holiday and went with my cousin, and we went down to the deserts of Morocco, and the morning I woke up, we went on a camel trek, And the first morning I woke up, I went to the top of the dune and I watched the sunrise and I just cried because it was so beautiful. And this whole idea and very clear vision came about starting initially a writer's retreat. And so then I started talking to my cousin and then the camel driver who was taking us around, he joined in and I was asking him about the area. And before we knew it, we were in business together, and 4 months later, I bought Café Tizardmé. Well, I bought a ruined house, but...
Yeah, you bought... that's right, Karen, you bought a ruined house.
Yes.
And, I mean, it was must have been such an incredible revelation, and you were saying off-air about how it just felt completely, completely right. So you bought a ruined house and then spent a period of time renovating that house, which is in the desert.
Yes.
How long did it take you to renovate it and turn it into an artist's quarters and your home, which is a retreat?
The initial stage took 9 months. So we stayed in traditional Berber tents. And, well, as soon as one room was ready in the house, they shoved me in there because they said I snored. So, but
We all know that person, don't we?
I still deny that I snore. And if I do, it's very cute. But so, yeah, we had to put in electricity, so we're solar-powered.
Hmm.
And we had to bring water, so we dug a well. These are all things I had no idea that I had to do before we actually went there.
Small details.
Yeah. but it was a huge learning curve, but we did it in 9 months.
Wow.
And then since then we started building a guest house and then a built-in camp. And so just gradually each year we sort of add on. And last year I finally got to build my own house.
Oh, nice.
So before that I was just sort of camping in whatever room wasn't being used. So
Karen, so just for our joysters benefit, geography-wise, where is Morocco? And I'm assuming the desert you're talking about is the Sahara Desert. So, yeah, whereabouts are we at the moment?
So Morocco is on the the very last country in North Africa on the west side. It's about 14 kilometres or miles, I'm not sure, from Spain across the Mediterranean, I guess.
Straits of Gibraltar,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the entrance to the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
I don't go there often. So Morocco is basically divided by the Atlas Mountains. And so we're on the eastern side of the Atlas Mountains, and our nearest biggest town is Erchidia, which no one would have heard of, but the nearest famous town would be Fez.
Right. Mm. And I just, you know, for me, there's a fair amount of, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but Sahara Desert, a fair amount of romance and roughing it and just being out in a destination that is so untouched and so remarkable that it would, as you said, you cried the first time you saw it, so it must be absolutely spectacular.
It is. I think the thing I love showing people the most is when it's nighttime and I say, come and see the stars, and they walk out the door and they immediately look up, and I went, no, just look straight ahead and you see stars on the horizon.
Right.
And I remember the first time I was looking at the horizon, I said, what's that light over there? And they go, well, it's a star.
Ah.
And it's it's just extraordinary what you can see. And the other thing is the silence, you know, and that's why we're solar powered. So we don't have generators for electricity. I mean, there's many reasons for being solar powered, but it's super quiet. And it does freak some people out a little bit. But they do get used to it.
And there's no internet, there's no telephones or anything like that you've got?
We can get, if you stand by a certain tree, you can get
the wind's
quite
blowing
good
in the
phone.
Right direction. Yeah.
It has got better since I first moved there, but it's not reliable.
But that's part of the allure of what you're doing, though, isn't it?
I don't want people to be on internet, and nor do they. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's a way to disconnect completely
and
just take it all in. And it's about the cultural experience, too, that you are providing them. It's not just this guest house in the middle of the desert. It's more than that.
And we like people to engage with the people in the village as much as possible. There's lots of children in the village. The village is about 17 houses or so. Lots of kids. And they love the artists that come and stay with us. Because they take photographs and they adore that. The women don't.
Right.
But the kids do.
So. And the village is, we were talking earlier about how the village and you sort of try to help each other out. Obviously, there's a lot of people that work with you and they live in the village. And even when it comes to the, you know, your veggie patch and things like that, you sort of share your overabundance of what you have with the village.
Yes.
That creates a whole other sort of aspect to that as well, as far as the sustainability and teaching people how to become a bit more sustainable in a desert where there's not much that grows.
And because they're basically settled nomads, gardening is not sort of something that they really know. There's a lot of sort of teaching of I'm not a gardener, but Yusuf, my business partner, is his father is quite a good gardener, even though they're nomads, but they figured it out.
So. Right.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. We're talking about Morocco today.
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. In the studio with us today is Karen Hadfield, and we are talking all things Morocco, and in particular her holiday home that she's got in the Sahara Desert. We were talking during the break about the cultural side of what you do and the difference between the Arabs and the Berbers. Is that right? And just want to get a bit more of your insight into that so that our audience can understand the difference.
The village where I live is a Berber village, and the Berbers are basically the indigenous population of Morocco. Then with the introduction of Islam, the Bedouin came over from the east and introduced Islam, and then, you know, many Arabs settled in Morocco.
And the Berbers were typically on the west side of the mountains, the Atlas Mountains?
They were everywhere. They're in the mountains. There are three Berber dialects, so the Berbers are sort of divided into three areas, the south, the north, and where we are, the sort of middle Atlas and the desert. They're quite spread out now because obviously a lot do go into the cities. There was also a very large Jewish Berber population.
Really?
Yeah. And there's an interesting film actually called From Tineria to Jerusalem. It's about the exodus that happened in the 60s, I think it was, where the Berber Jews went to Israel as part of the repopulation of Israel. But I digress. So so you have the three Berber dialects, and then the main language of Morocco is Darija, which is Moroccan Arabic.
Right.
It's only spoken in Morocco. So if you speak classical Arabic, you're not necessarily going to be understood in Morocco. And then, of course, the Berbers speak the Darija as well. And there's a couple other Arabic dialects from up north. So it's quite... and then French is the official language.
Okay, so if you speak French, you can speak to pretty much anybody? Is that right, or give or take?
Depends where you are, again. If you're on the east side of the... the west side of the Atlas, where Marrakesh, Fez, the big cities, yes, you can get by with French. But as soon as you come to the desert, less French is spoken, and there's quite a few French hotels around, but and then up north, Spanish serves you quite well because it's so close to Spain.
I have to tell you, I work in travel, and this year we have seen a huge, huge surge of people going to Morocco because Morocco, fortunately, was one of the few Arab countries that didn't have what they termed the Arab springtime, where there were revolutions and so on and so forth. The feedback here in Australia that we're getting is it is definitely a must-see destination to go to. What are your favourite places?
My place.
Of course.
And that's it, really.
That's a good answer. So describe a classic day in your place. So we've all arrived. We've never been to the Sahara Desert before. What would we be doing on that first day there?
Okay. Well, one thing I have to say about our place is it's really, really good food. So we feed you really well.
Right.
And we base people's stays on a full board. Like most places are just bed and breakfast or maybe dinner included as well. Mm-hmm. But because there's no alternative, we do an all-inclusive with lunch and dinner and everything. If you're into fossils, there because it's an ancient seabed where we are, so there's the place is just scattered with fossils.
Right.
Beautiful walking country. It's really, really lovely. Of course, there's camel trekking. You can do that. Bird watching in March time. March through to May, we get flamingo.
Wow.
They come, if there's enough water, there are a couple of lakes that form just nearby us, and we're on the edge of a river, and sometimes that flows. But there was one year we got a massive river, and then suddenly just all the mountainsides were filled with wildflowers that I'd never seen before.
Wow.
And just all these birds came in that I'd never seen.
Amazing.
I'd been there 4 years, and it was kind of like, wow, this is so exciting. And the camels were happy because they had a lot of good feed. And But it's very seasonal. It's so, people say, oh, can we have, I've had groups who come back or people who come back and they'll go, oh, can we have that lovely avocado thing that you did last time? And I go, no, because it's not avocado season this time. and I really like that it's totally seasonal. And we get excited about, it's pomegranate season. We can do all of these dishes and then that goes. And then, oh, avocados are in and we'll do those things. Yeah. So it's all, yeah.
Well, one thing with the food, again, just mentioning, it is BYO. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can get alcohol where we are, but it's super expensive.
Right.
And we can't sell it. And so I always advise people that when they're coming down, because most people would land in Marrakesh or Fez and then come down. It's a day's drive from either place. But it's about a third of the price in Marrakesh than in our region.
Right, okay.
So, and if you bring me a bottle of whiskey, well, that's all good.
There'll be many a night around the campfire, I'd imagine.
That's the other thing we do. I think the best months to come to us are between November and March. Yeah. And it's the days are sort of crisp, but, gets
crisp,
up to 22. Well, the mornings are crisp.
Okay.
Yep. So it can be, 1-2 degrees in the morning in the winter, but it's clear blue skies and it's fresh and it's just beautiful.
Yep.
March, April can be a lot of sandstorms. So it's not so pretty then.
Yeah.
But,
I hear sandstorm and I think of the movie The Mummy, and those great big enormous. Is that what it's like?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I've got a picture actually. I think I put it on my web. I think I put it on the Facebook page. And I'm just outside my house and I've taken a photo of this wall of sand that's just the other side of the wall to our place. Yeah. And you see it coming and then you sit and you watch it and you go, okay, we should maybe go in now. and then it hits. Yeah. I mean, it's exciting, but, you can't get any work done in it.
No.
So it's exciting for the visitors.
Karen, can you describe some of the, what the cafe retreat is, what your accommodation is like? Because I know you have several different types of accommodation.
Yes. So we built it technically is a riad, because a riad means a courtyard garden.
Yep.
So we got four rooms centred around a garden. They're all en suite as well. So they're double rooms, but they can be converted into twin rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got a sort of built-in camp. We used to have a freestanding camp, but every time a visitor arrived, the wind would come and it would all fall over. So we stopped that. So we have 5 tented accommodations and they're also ensuite bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of rooms in the house and generally they're used for, example, we get a group that arrive with a driver, so the driver would have one of those rooms and they're not ensuite, so shared bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And then we've got 2 studios for artists to work in.
That's right, because you are an artist retreat.
That's our primary business, yeah.
And, I mean, yourself as an artist, are you taking, are you working with the artists that visit or they're just there on the doing their own thing?
It's totally self-directed. And you do apply to be a resident, artist in residence. But I don't demand an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And most of what I'm trying to gauge from someone's application is the types of things they'd like to do whilst they're with us, and why they want to come to the desert, and what, you know, why is that pertinent to the work they're doing or the space they're in. And if they just want to come and breathe, it's mainly to be re-inspired. Because having, I'm not a visual artist, I'm a performance artist. And through my time of working with a lot of artists, because I used to be a festival director, and there's just no time for an artist to just recharge. So I think this whole idea was just as a reaction to that, and to provide a place where people can just come and just, yeah, get re-inspired.
Do you have to be an artist to come and stay with you?
No, no. That's for the Artist in Residence program.
Okay, right.
So we also do take visitors. We have a 3-night minimum because you need... It distresses us when people just come for one night.
But you're not going to drive all of that way. If it takes a day to get there and a day to get back, why would you want to do that? No.
They, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
They bust in and bust out.
Yeah. Oh, crazy.
Yeah. So we like people to slow down, and you need at least 3 nights. So.
Riads are very common in Morocco. Yeah. I know you often have a choice when you travel there. You can either stay in standard hotels like people do, or you have the opportunity to actually go online and find some riads. And they're beautiful, aren't they?
Oh, they're gorgeous, gorgeous. And when you're in the sort of mayhem that is Marrakesh or Fez, you open the door to your riad and you close that, and it's quiet. Like, they're so soundproof because the walls are super thick.
Yeah.
And there's always a sort of a little lobby to protect you from the outside world. And it's just beautiful. And the atrium just goes up to the top floor, and it's all open.
Yep.
And then the rooms sort of are on each floor as you go up.
And it's interesting because in Marrakesh, you can be right in the middle of the Marrakesh market. And and what you said is absolutely right. It's mayhem. There are people everywhere.
Yeah.
You feel as though you're right in the thick of craziness. And then you open the door to your riad and you thought, thank God.
And there's birds tweeting and lemon trees and, you know, and it's just gorgeous.
It does sound like paradise, really.
Yeah, it
and
is.
And the smell of those spices. What do you think of all the spices?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love them. Yeah. Yeah. I've stopped talking. It's not good for radio, but I just smelt them then.
And they're so colourful, aren't they?
Yeah.
I absolutely love them.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. We are talking all things Morocco. We'd love to hear from anyone who's interested in discussing, hearing, asking questions about Morocco. You can SMS on 0427 569 949. You can phone and leave a message at the front desk, 1300 569 949, or email us on air at joy.org.au. Thanks, Karen, for taking the time out to talk with us today.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much. Yes, we've got a couple of questions. Obviously, in Morocco, the LGBTI community, there's a few barriers there. It's actually illegal to be gay or lesbian in the country, which is a very stark contrast to Spain, which is just an hour ferry ride away, the closest point. What sort of things should we be careful about, or is there anything we need to be careful about when traveling in Morocco, from your perspective?
I think it's the same as with anywhere that you travel, and that is to be aware of what the local customs are, be discreet. I mean, even straight couples don't hold hands.
Right.
There's no outward displays of any sexuality or anything.
PDAs.
PDAs.
Public displays of affection.
Of affection, yeah. And I have to say, when I come back to Australia, I get a little shocked.
Right.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm so used to people... The male and female separation is quite big in Morocco.
Yeah, right.
And everyone's happy with that. I mean, you will find men holding hands a lot, but that's their sign of friendship,
right?
And women also hold hands.
See, I love that.
Men are very open in that way with each other.
Yeah. It's one thing about our society that I just think is so wrong.com. I don't get it.
No, really.
I'd love to hold your hand right now, Ted.
Let's do it.
Well, you can.
We're holding hands right now. We're loving every minute of it.
Karen, I think that we spoke a little while ago about you asked your, I think you're the person you run the business with, yourself, about how you can tell the difference between someone who's holding hands because they're friends and someone who's holding hands because they're a couple.
Yeah. And he just said, you just know.
Really? That's hilarious.
You just know.
You just know.
So you just can't hide it
it's
after
that
all,
vibe.
Can you?
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, like I say, I mean, I would, wherever you travel, just be very aware of what the local customs are and be respectful, you know.
It's not rocket science, is
it's
it?
It's not. No. It's not.
Karen, I have only been to Morocco once, and that was only to Marrakesh for 5 days, and I absolutely adored it. What I loved was the big medinas and how everybody got together and had dinner at this medina. It seemed like the entire city
The Jemaah el Fanar.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that is an extraordinary.
Amazing, yeah.
And the best thing to do there when you're going around is find the stall, because it's like, I don't know, 150 stalls, and they just set up each night. It's not a permanent structure. And you just find the stall where most Moroccans are sitting, and that's where you should eat.
Fantastic.
Don't go to the one with all the tourists in it.
That's like most places. Yeah. Which is very good advice. Yeah. I've got a question. It might sound a bit strange, but I'll ask it anyway. Have you ever buried yourself neck deep in the sand?
It's big where we are. They're called sand baths, and they're fantastic for rheumatism.
So it's a true thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And a friend of mine does it. She lives in the north of Spain, and it's very cold and very wet up there. And when she's up there, she walks with the aid of two sticks. Yep. She comes down, she has a sand bath, and I'll describe the process in a minute. And at the end of the treatment, she can do yoga and backflips and just be
fascinating. Yeah,
she can get her legs over her head. You know,
that's incredible.
Yeah,
it's
quite extraordinary. So it's only done in the very hot months. So we don't do it because we're closed. But there's plenty of other places that do it. And it goes for about 3 days, and each day it's only about 5 to maybe 10 minutes, and they literally bury you in sand so that it's a V sort of from your shoulders to your sternum. So that's left open, and so is your head, but the rest of you is buried in sand. You stay there for 5 whatever minutes, and then you're taken out, wrapped in blankets, given that it's 50 degrees outside. And then you're taken to a small room or your bedroom, and you're kept warm. And then the next day you're sent out again, and then the day after. And I met someone on a day when it was 55 degrees. I was there, and I've never been there since when it's so hot. And he was as cool as a cucumber.
Really?
And he just, I don't know, it just balanced out his internal with the external. And he, you know, we were sweating messes.
Right.
And he was just, nothing touched him. Mm. Yeah, it was extraordinary.
How long do the effects last, like with your friend, for
three or four months.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
God, that's worth a trip three times a year, four times a year, you know, if you've got rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, yeah. So it's quite extraordinary.
For the ladies, Fiona, for example, she loves to travel. We've found that she's a bit of a travel-holic. What would the girls like in Morocco, do you think? Or your resort, for that matter, your retreat? What would a day for Fiona like? A bit of pampering? Is there any?
Well, I know that we don't have one in our village because it takes too much wood, but the hammam.
Oh, I love a hammam.
Which is the public one. Thought you might be a hammam girl.
Definitely.
But I have to say, the men do hammam too.
What is it?
It's a public bath.
And
you get a scrub down and a massage and a skin, you know.
They even make these fabulous special towels,
Karen,
which I bought.
Karen, I have to say, I did one of those in Istanbul, and I was quite excited until I got in. And I was lying naked on the tiles, which were very hot. And so I was waiting for my scrubber to come and scrub me down, and I had the oldest and the ugliest man to do that. And he was scrubbing me so hard, I'm like, in the end, get away from me. I want that young, pretty one over there. You do feel incredible after you've had one, don't you?
And it's being done publicly.
It is, in front of everybody.
Okay.
It's a group thing.
I have to admit, I'm always too shy to go to the hammam because you're with all these big Berber women, and I'm this. I'm tall, but I'm skinny as, and I know that they just be going, ooh.
It is true. You get a lot of comments when you go to the hammams in whatever country, and people do. You know,
they openly
talking about you.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy
yours?
Separate men and women?
I did. Yeah. Although, you know, there have been times where I've like, wow, that was a little bit rough, or perhaps they were a little bit too brusque. Like they push you around and they tell you where to go, and then they giggle at you.
But you feel like you're really dirty. Right? I mean, how much can they scrub off you?
A couple of kilos.
I was actually at a hammam in Paris with a friend of mine, and she said to me afterwards, she said, she only massaged my boob. That's all she massaged.
What are they scrubbing you with?
These really hard brushes.
Well, they also like can use brush. Like these sort of clay blends that they actually use as a scrub, and in some cases it's like a sort of volcanic ash that they scrub. So you know, wherever you go, it is quite different.
Yeah.
I mean, I always, of course, after the scrub, you get to lay around on the tiles, and yeah, it's wonderful.
And then the shower that they give you is just gorgeous. Yeah,
it's just, I love the exoticness of it.
Yeah. But you need to pick your scrubber.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think you get to pick your scrubber.
You don't, do you?
No.
Unlucky for me.
You. Yeah.
Sorry, Karen, we have digressed.
I don't know where we've gone with all of this.
I knew that would open up some conversation.
Food in Morocco, you foodies. I've got a table full of foodies here. What's happening with food in Morocco?
Well, what people might not know is that the tagine, which you all know as Moroccan, is a Berber dish. Because it's a one-pot dish, and I've noticed with the Berbers, because I know nomad families, and they, so when you eat a tagine, traditionally you would use bread as the implement with which to pick up the food, and it would only be using a spoon if you had couscous.
Okay.
They only have one glass of water on the table, so it's really minimal.
Yeah,
you know, if you're eating traditionally, very minimal implements, so they're not sort of packing up an entire kitchen every time they move on.
Yeah,
So it's really good.
Yeah, and with the tagines, I mean, there's obviously a lot of meat in these traditional dishes with vegetables. I mean, what's the kind of main sort of mainstay of protein at the retreat?
Yeah, we generally. Or I would say beef and chicken are the two main ones. It's not so easy to get lamb, and sometimes we get goat. You can get mutton, but not lamb.
Mm.
Right.
So we also have sheep, and if you're a bit squeamish, shut your ears now. So we will slaughter our sheep when we have quite a lot of visitors, because then it's fresh. And it's hard sometimes to get into town, so when we've got enough people, we'll do that.
What was the hardest thing you had to do? You know, you're an hour, a day's drive away from a city, and you've built a resort or a retreat in the Sahara Desert. What was the most difficult thing?
Oh gosh!
No, you.
I think everything.
Can you believe you did it?
No, and actually, you know, I mean, some days we get a little down.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we crack open the photo album.
Right.
And we just go through that because I've documented, from where we started to where we are. And it makes us feel better because we go, we've achieved something. Yeah.
Because you are pretty remote and isolated as well, I guess. And that's a good thing, but it also can have a detrimental effect when you feel down a bit.
Well, and we just, if there's no one there, and we do have, you know, some days, and I sort of do program some days where we don't have people because we do need a break. But after 2 days, you're going, where is everyone?
Yeah.
And you do get interesting people there. Like a lot of people say, do you get lonely? And I never do because all these artists are coming, as Youssef said, because he's not really traveled outside of his area. And he said, why would I need to? The world comes to me. You know, and you just meet incredibly fascinating people.
So many of the people that come to visit, would you say they were mostly Australians and British, or, you know, what are the most visitors you have?
I think we get a lot of Australians just because I have, you know, a lot of connections with Australia. But Japan, South Korea, not so many English, and Scandinavian, Dutch, a lot of Dutch come as well.
This Joycast
Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Just a quick question about the sort of, you know, whenever I travel, the one of the top things on my list is making sure that I have my medical coverage and insurance in place. In Morocco, obviously, you know, it's still developing. What can travelers expect from a medical point of view if somebody needs help, you know, from that side of things? I mean, you're an hour outside of the closest city. But what sort of precautions should be made?
Well, I think it's probably guaranteed that most people get a GP tummy when they come to Morocco. A lot of people bring with them probiotics. Is that it? And I don't recommend Imodium unless you have got a long bus journey. But if you like, it's better to get it
take
out.
Its course.
Take its course.
How pleasant.
So we have access. There's lots of pharmacies, and we have you know, like Gastrolite and stuff like that to replenish. There's a hospital in Erfurt which we have taken people to a couple of times when they've had really bad gastro, and they get a blast of antibiotics. I don't recommend antibiotics, but I don't for anything. But you know, you sometimes just need that. They call it a penicillin bomb. And, you know, we've had people that have arrived at our doorstep. This one guy had a broken foot. He came off his motorbike, and so we got him to hospital, and then we arranged for transport and got him to Fez and flew him out and back home. And so, yes, we're remote, but, you know, we've got a Land Rover that's serves as a village ambulance. Like, we've taken, you know, Yusef's wife had a breech baby, and so she was dashed off to hospital, and the ambulance met them in their food and took her to the big hospital in Ereshkigal. You can get a helicopter if there's major emergencies, but we've never had anything of that nature. Generally, an upset stomach is as much as you get. And I have pawpaw ointment for anything else.
Works every time.
It does.
It does.
And the locals come to me and they go, oh, and I have oil of cloves because their teeth are really bad.
I didn't know how good that worked, oil of cloves.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Have you ever done that?
No, I've never done that.
If you ever want to put off going to the dentist, if you're afraid of the dentist, put that stuff all over your teeth and you won't need to go to the dentist.
What is it?
It just takes away the pain.
Really?
Oil of cloves,
It just puts off the inevitable, really. Just go to your dentist and take care of it, everybody.
Special CSA.
I was certainly interested in talking to Karen about the best way for people to dress in their area, because I know that for women, you know, a lot of people travel and they don't think very much about how they should dress to, you know, be comfortable in the environment, not only from an like sun and all that sort of stuff, but also to really
culturally
be sensitive and blend in, particularly if you're, you know, tall and blonde.
Yeah.
Which you are, Karen. Yes.
I always wear long sleeves. The things that shouldn't be shown are your midriff, your shoulders and your knees. So if I was to wear a dress, I would wear leggings. But normally I wear trousers, but not super tight trousers. Shoulders I always have covered. I generally don't cover my head. But if, and you're not allowed in a mosque anyway. But if I go to a ceremony with family, I always wear a scarf, but I don't wear hijab, like the tight fitting one. I just respectfully cover, which is traditional nomad actually as well. They don't always have the hijab. But one important thing I learned was that already Moroccan men think that Western women are loose, which compared to their own women, they are incredibly loose. So you do have to sort of balance, be aware of that. And it's really provocative to look a man in the eye.
For a woman to look a man in the eye.
Even for a man to look a man in the eyes.
Is it?
And if you notice, when you go to a cafe, all the chairs are side by side.
Really?
We tend to sit opposite each other.
That's right.
They sit by side and talk into the air.
Right.
That's interesting.
And maybe glance to each other, but they don't do what we're doing now, direct eye contact. And it's very provocative.
Wow.
That is
very... For us, it's really polite.
So if you're having, you're having a conversation with a Moroccan man, you just look where? I mean, if you have to address somebody, what would you do as a woman?
I don't know what I do. It just comes sort of naturally.
Right.
You know, because we, well, like I'm talking to you now and I'd just sort of be looking at something else.
Right.
You don't have to be sort of like, you know, kowtowing, but just respectful of that. And I'll notice when guests ask Youssef questions, he'll look at me when he's answering the question.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's partly he's looking at me, so he's not looking at the other person, but he's looking at me and I'm sort of going, that's right. So, you know, or your English is okay, or that sort of thing.
In that sort of heat, I mean, aside from, you know, wanting to do the right thing by traditional customs and covering yourself, in that heat, you don't want to be wearing just your shorts and a T-shirt anyway.
No, it's cooler to wear, you know, one of their cotton jellabas and you've
cover
got all this.
Up. And it's interesting with that really, really dry heat. I found also that I have never experienced. I've been in Egypt when it's been 55 degrees, and it's something everybody should experience once in your life. It's I wasn't sweating like a pig, but I was completely aware of the fact that how quickly my body was dehydrating.
Yeah. You are sweating like a pig, but it dries in a second.
It does.
And that's the other big health thing is take water. I get a lot of people who get dehydrated. Right. Yeah.
Have you been to the Atlas Mountains?
A little bit.
Yes.
More passing through than actually sort of staying there. Yeah.
How on earth did you end up in Morocco in the first place? You said you were there.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I was I'd gone home to England to have Christmas with family, and I just needed a holiday after Christmas with family, and so
who doesn't?
I was trying to convince anyone and everyone to come with me to Turkey, and no one had the time or the inclination. And then my cousin said, "Well, I'm going to Morocco. Do you want to come with me?" And I went, "Yeah, all right." I never even considered Morocco.
And right, Karen, you must actually tell us what you explained during the break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So my dad, he just was so interested and intrigued as to why I felt so at home in this place. So he got our DNA, our family DNA done, and I'm 2% Berber.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That,
I
love it.
Makes a lot more sense now, doesn't it?
It does.
So you've had no problems on your camels, I would imagine. So.
Oh, me and camels get on very well. I never ride them, though. I only walk with them. Okay. Yeah.
Camel milk, is that?
Oh, it's yummy. So it's like a really rich cow's milk.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's starting to become popular in Australia now, believe it or not.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah.
Do you make the camel milk into any types of cheese?
No.
It's
just
not,
drink it straight.
You just drink it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do, you don't get much dairy at all where we are. So if there's milk, they'll just drink it straight.
Mm-hmm.
Is it pasteurized or not?
No. It's direct.
Yeah.
You go to the place.
Yeah.
They milk the camel. Here you are. Here's a glass.
Wow.
And you drink it just straight like that?
Yeah, warm.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's fascinating.
Oh, your face.
It's not really my idea of a good night out, let's just say, shall we?
Yeah, gin with it. Maybe that's a different scenario.
Well, that's Fiona's alley, not mine. I don't know. I'm a bit funny about that sort of stuff. But, but you know, if
you can
I was
chill
served,
it.
I would, you know, yeah. I think but I think I'd like a bit of Milo in mine.
Yeah.
Is that right? That's not going to happen.
Hey, the funny thing about Morocco is one of those very, very lucky countries that you get to Casablanca and you've got, you know, the cool and the brilliance of the Mediterranean. Mm. And then as you move into Marrakesh, it starts to warm up. And then when you get up to the Sahara, where you are, it's quite spectacular.
Yeah.
It's a very rich country as far as culture and places to visit.
Yeah. For a tiny place, it's got the most extraordinary diversity. Mm. And you asked me before about my favourite places, and I was a bit flippant, but I really like Tangier. Yeah. Tangier's got this edge to it, and it's a bit decaying. But and I stayed in the hotel where Burroughs and Kerouac and everyone stayed, and you know it was very exotic. And also, I do like Fez as well.
Yeah.
Not so keen on Casablanca.
We were talking earlier about the rich heritage of Western writers and journalists going there, like Paul and Jane Bowles and the Beat Poets and things like that. I mean, it has a wonderful history of foreigners popping in to expand. I think that, you know, it would be a beautiful place to go on.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Karen, before the break, we were talking about the rich history of foreign writers visiting Casablanca, Marrakesh, Tangiers, the Paul and Jane Bowles. I mean, was that any part of the inspiration to start a writers and artists retreat?
Not directly, but I think the landscape is so inspirational. You know, it was a no-brainer, really. And that's why people are so attracted.
Do you have a favourite book about Morocco?
Oh, actually, I've just finished reading Lords of the High Atlas, which is about the history of the French taking over and just the history of the tribes in Morocco. Fascinating.
Uh-huh, okay.
Ugly listeners. And quite violent.
Ooh.
Oh, good.
Hey, just quickly, and I do apologise, did you used to go to the Dance Works? No? Does that ring a bell with you?
In Melbourne?
Yes.
Yeah, I used to be their production manager.
Okay. Do you know Brian Smith?
Yes.
Yeah, he knows you. He sent me through a message saying, say hello to Karen for you. I'll give you those details after. He wants to go to Morocco and would like to know what your website is.
Excellent.
Yep. What's your website?
Do I say it now?
You do.
Shameless plug.
You shame away.
www.cafetizadmin.com.
And again, Fiona, what?
www.cafetizadmin.com.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Just Google Karen Hadfield.
There you go.
Yeah, Google.
Well, I certainly feel inspired to go to Morocco now, and you will be seeing me sometime in the future. And I would love to go. But thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your passion and what you know about Morocco. And it's been an incredible journey that we kind of took with you. So I think we get a good idea of what to expect and the cultural beliefs and that side of things. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Coming up next week, we have Greece, is what we're talking
about. Yep, we're going to Greece.
It's not Greece
week.
Is the word, is it?
No.
No, okay. No.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.